Okay, good. I think this is right now. Okay. We're out of executive session. Yes. Tape recorder's on. Okay.
We're missing one.
We've got one person to come back here.
Yep.
While we're waiting for to come back. We're kind of waiting. I just want to thank everybody because I know how much time and thought and preparation everybody has put into this meeting, and I really appreciate that. So now,
yeah. So I'll start because I know one of the big discussion items for the meeting tonight would be kindergarten and all day, everyday kindergarten, and then the contingency plan related to that. So there's been a new piece of information that we just got today at 3 o'clock. The original plan was there would be savings related to changing from all day everyday kindergarten to a part time kindergarten option, basically. We just received the House version of the state funding budget. I think that was last week. The good news with that, which again, that's only the House version, so nothing is certain, but the good news with that House version is in fiscal 24, we would receive an additional $3 million estimated, and in fiscal 25, we would receive an additional $3.4 million estimated. Because of that, and because our growth is really what's driving that increase in money, I asked Ohio Department of Education to run a simulation for us. Mm-hmm. What would that new funding look like if we switched from all day K down to part time? Because in essence, what that means is ODE would no longer calculate each kindergarten student as one FTE. They would then calculate them as a half FTE, which mm-hmm. then brings our funded enrollment down. So again, at 3 o'clock today, I got those numbers, and it kind of is a game changer. Changing from all day K down to a part-time kindergarten in fiscal 24, again, using only those House estimates, would reduce our revenues by $670,000. And in fiscal 25, it would reduce our revenues by $1.2 million. So that has a pretty large impact on the idea of expenditure savings from changing from all day kindergarten to part-time kindergarten. Because, you know, while you would still be saving expenditures, now you're actually losing revenue that offsets those expenditure savings.
Okay.
Now, again, we're talking only on estimates because we've only got mm-hmm. the House version right now, and we've still got the Senate version to come, and then a final version that we won't know until June 30. And then the problem is you can't wait until June 30 to make a decision because we can't then make staffing changes in July to make a change all of a sudden. So we kind of have to make a decision based on information we have right now.
And I would say from a staffing perspective, mm-hmm. I certainly sent you an update last night.
Right.
And we received 5 additional potential resignations today.
Mm-hmm.
So from a staffing perspective, we have now far exceeded $2 million, which was the collective contingency plan proposal. So we were over $2 million just in salaries with where we sit today, shifting kindergarten teachers into those holes at their
right.
grade and et cetera. So at this point, we've definitely actualized that saving. So I think, considering both of those factors is important as we move forward.
Right. Our focus has been long-term, knowing that there's a lot of uncertainty out there. You know, we know that we need to be back on in November if we want to continue offering the programs that we currently have. And one way to extend our funds and to try and guarantee that we don't become a levy cycle every 2 or 3 years is to start building up a reserve, knowing that we have that unknown in the future. So yeah, this new information is pretty interesting, to say the least. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So our contingency plan did not include, or it was a hiring freeze.
Right.
It was not the elimination of kindergarten, but the hiring freeze
resulted in
pulling staff from kindergarten to backfill their positions. So if we move forward with all day, every day kindergarten, how does that impact staffing, and how, what do we need to do to move forward in that direction?
Mm-hmm. So if we were going that direction, we would need to make some postings for the elementary openings that we would not be filling by kindergarten teachers. Does that make sense? So
mm-hmm.
I'd have to get the total from Lynette. Off the top of my head, we have two third grade, a potential, I think it was first grade, came out today. Mm-hmm. So probably around 7 positions now. Now, I will also tell you that we'll be receiving resignations well into the summer. We do every summer.
Mm-hmm.
So July 10th is that date that we have as a, you know,
kind of a cutoff date.
But also, we always try to extend if someone's looking to move, that we'll try to accommodate that if we can find a replacement. Mm-hmm. My urgency is we're way behind the hiring game. So I know other districts surrounding us haven't even had applicants for some jobs. So if there's any type of reconsideration of using that K staff, there is a sense of urgency associated with that. I think Lynette's probably in panic mode, but just
right.
to try to fill spots. I would used to tell you that we get hundreds of applications for K-3. That's not the case anymore because of a teacher shortage.
Right.
And I would imagine, in all transparency, there would be some reluctancy with a failed levy for a new teacher to consider
yes.
Marysville. There would have right. to be thought, pending there's a November ask, you have opportunities in other
districts,
communities that appear more stable financially. So it will not be an easy task.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Okay. I mean, does anybody else have any other questions about this or comments? Sure.
As a follow-up
yeah.
up to that.
Yeah, yeah.
Mm-hmm. I'm just thinking now, so
yeah.
what happens if we move this direction, and then we post positions, and those positions remain unfilled? How does that, I'm just thinking kind of right now as we're getting this, how does that?
We just keep beating the bushes till we try to find someone. We
okay.
call people who have subbed. We call people who have retired. We, Lynette, worked harder. but that's, it, I mean, we had an intervention specialist job all year open this year, and we
mm-hmm.
had to piecemeal it together to get through the year.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
So,
but it can be done. It'll be tight, but it can be done.
Sure. I mean, we're going to work. I can't promise that I can make someone appear, but we would work, like always, we'll be dedicated to finding people to fill that spot.
Mm-hmm. Right.
We may have to fill it with the long-term sub.
Mm-hmm.
If we can't find someone, we'll look for, if that scenario, let's say we had to fill it that way, we'd then look for a December grad that might be able to come in and fill.
Right.
Right.
So really we're talking about, again, just kind of just focusing on that K-4 group as far as, because we're using if we would use those kindergarten staff members, then originally they were going to be filling the spots in K-4.
Correct.
Right.
Correct. Tri-Academy and we'll fill
Bunzold.
In spots and
mm-hmm.
Bunzold will fill in spots on both ends. So some people
right.
are transitioning to the high school that
right.
are 7-12. Some people are going down to Creekview. It just depends on
right.
their
so there would be the savings there that would continue.
And that, yes,
right.
that would be the case.
Right.
And you'd be able to actualize the $2 million on those shifts.
Gotcha. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I would hope that people realize that it's a little bit like the situation with busing. This was not always the case, but currently we get reimbursed for transporting our students. And busing was not part of our contingency plan because we're receiving the money to pay for busing, and mm-hmm. there was no savings in terms of that mm-hmm. that cut. We've now learned that
potentially
mm-hmm. we could have exactly or a somewhat similar situation with kindergarten age kids. I know that in the legislature, from my conversations, there is support for the Fair School Funding Plan, which is what the House has adopted, and that doesn't provide any guarantees in the Senate. But overall, I think there is movement to increase funding in some way. Mm-hmm. Both in the House and in the Senate, it might not look the same, and it could be very different amounts. But we know that parents need to start making plans. We know teachers need to make plans. And we have to make some sort of decision tonight in order to set the course. And we'll deal with things as we move forward.
So. And I get one other question is you know, if the Fair School Funding Plan, if it doesn't go the House route, and, you know, we've gone ahead and moved and said, yep, we're going to do all day, everyday kindergarten, what's the potential, what's the negative potential that way?
I mean, the negative potential would be we're not actualizing as much savings from the contingency plan that we would have.
Right.
I guess the flip side of that is because we've had more resignations than we've expected and there's even more still coming, we're still going to realize a large savings from the contingency plan that will be over $2 million.
Right.
And I hope people also realize this. This is still impacting the students. The resignations, the reduction in staff throughout the district mm-hmm. is going to result in mm-hmm. larger class sizes, and there will be other pieces of our contingency plan affecting athletics and transportation, extracurricular transportation, mm-hmm. and those kinds of things. This is not a move that eliminates the pain.
The only other update I would have just on the post-levy side is we are scheduled to meet with booster presidents and head coaches next Wednesday. That'll be Todd and I, the building principals and middle school through high school. So we have a formula for them so they can see how to estimate their transportation expenses. We have things prepared for their assistant coach so they can make decisions on funding that or their approach. So those are scheduled for next week.
With additional question about the overall contingency plan, what is the plan to transition students from Tri-Academy to the high school, or mm-hmm. what's the length of time that current Tri-Academy students have to finish mm-hmm. their work? Is there a summer school option? What's that look like?
So there's 18 students left. So the Tri-Academy did not accept new kids. They kind of have an open door throughout the semester. So once the contingency plan came out, they slowed that down with the idea of not accepting anyone till they knew the outcome. So they're down to 18 kids that would transition back to whatever building they came from. So if you're originally an early college student, you'll go to that building. High school, you go to that building. Scott has already been meeting with the principals. They have a spreadsheet going for the needs of the students. Some students are trying to finish now and looking at ways they can take online courses through the summer. So we're trying to work that out. There is high anxiety on behalf of some of the students because they lacked success when they were there the first time, and there's kind of for some students an intimidation factor with going back to the larger setting. So both sets of principals are going to identify kind of an adult mentor and a student mentor for mm-hmm. those students mm-hmm. To help with that transition back as well. So all of those things are kind of in the works as we speak. I would say the biggest focus for a lot of the kids is trying to complete now so they right. don't have to transition back.
That's at the end of this month, or is there a summer school option for them?
That's what we're working on.
We're working on that.
Yeah. Okay.
And I would also say, just from our building visit, that, you know, we heard about a lot of really great partnerships that they've developed. Like, people from Job and Family Services have come and spoken to the students about different supports that are resources available for them, and just some other mentors and everything. So hopefully those will remain. Mm-hmm. But yeah. Okay.
And I can ask Scott, that could yeah. be part of that plan.
Yeah.
I just was not informed of that today when we talked.
Yeah.
I think okay. equally important are Tri-Academy teachers
yes.
and really making sure, you know, we're kind of saying here are the openings, pick where you'd like to go, mm-hmm. you know, type of thing. But I'd be remiss to say that they have, if I didn't say, they have put their heart and soul into developing this really
yes.
cool, unique learning space for kids.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I want to make sure they're okay, too, because it's they lead with their hearts. So.
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Well, given all this conversation, we did approve a contingency plan back in January. So at this point, I would consider a motion. I would accept a motion to reconsider the contingency plan that was approved in January.
So moved.
Motion by
Mr.
Keck.
And I was on the prevailing side.
Okay. Motion by Mr. Keck.
Second.
Second by Mr. Ferguson. Could we have a roll call, please?
Mr. Keck?
Yes.
Mr. Ferguson?
Yes.
Ms. Savage?
Yes.
Mr. Smith?
Yes.
Ms. Devine?
Yes. Motion carries. So now that original contingency plan is on the table, and I would accept a motion to amend the contingency plan to eliminate the K-4 hiring freeze and anything the superintendent deems necessary. Does that, you want me
well,
to?
In light of the new information,
yes,
and the savings and the possibility of the new formula from the state, I would say that we amend that hiring freeze to include exclude K through four mm-hmm. and any positions the superintendent deemed necessary to continue.
Okay. We have a motion on the table. Do we have a second?
Second.
Second by Mr. Smith. Discussion at this point?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yeah.
So to clarify that, the motion is to amend our original contingency plan to eliminate that K-4 hiring freeze and allow Diane to fill those K-4 positions and any other positions that are deemed necessary.
And so what that would entail is that we hire people to fill the K-4, but then
yes.
that would bump those people back to kindergarten possibly, or new staff into kindergarten, correct?
Correct.
When the verbiage as other staff or other hiring as deemed necessary, like what's mm-hmm. what's the
parameters
for that?
Mm-hmm,
is it
yeah.
state requirements? I think that's what we spoke about in previous board meetings, was if the state law says you have to have this staff, or is that what you're
yeah.
using?
Like nurses, psychologists, whatever.
Yeah, mm-hmm. nurses, psychologists,
like special
things that are dictated by number caps. Something that might be a safety concern, you know, like a guidance counselor, I would suggest might be a safety concern for students. We're short a guidance counselor at the high school, so mm-hmm. that would be an additional area.
And is the goal, I'm sorry,
no,
is the
yeah,
goal
go
to still
yes.
ensure that we actualize $2 million?
Mm-hmm.
I know we can't say that in our motion, but that's the mark, right? We're trying to have $2 million expense savings, I should say. That's the goal.
Correct.
And how would we, I guess, track that to make sure that when we have new hires, that information will be presented?
We'll share it with the board. I mean, we track
time.
It all the time. So.
I understood.
Yeah.
Just as a,
yeah.
Okay.
Yep.
I think it's important to note on a regular school basis, mm-hmm. we try to stay, I always call it staffing flat, but
yes.
we always try to stay at zero anyways with no increase. So when people leave, we try to stick to what our expenses were. That's a typical operating procedure for the school district, not every school district, even when we're growing. So mm-hmm. this is something we monitor all the time. So we can, we'll definitely continue to share that and update the board on savings.
The reason we need to have that in there, just to be clear, is because we're not going to have another meeting in time to 100%. approve that. And so, I mean, those hirings have to happen right now. We can't wait
right.
until the June meeting.
Right. Well, we have a meeting.
We have one next week,
sooner the better.
Yeah.
Well, we're behind.
Right.
Yeah, we're behind right now.
We normally are hiring in February.
Yeah. Yeah, I think the latitude to the superintendent to fill positions that are needed. She mentioned classroom cap, and that's, you know, if we were talking in terms of about 35 students per class in a high school. So if we have in the English department, we're up to 40 kids in two mm-hmm. or three or four different classes. Being able to make an adjustment, because as much as we're trying to make sure that we live within our budget and live within the financial constraints that we have, we also have to produce a quality education, because mm-hmm. It doesn't do us any good to spend money and end up not getting good quality instruction and a good experience for mm-hmm. our students.
Right.
I think this flexibility will allow our superintendent to be able to work to try to achieve both of those goals.
Mm-hmm.
And I think this measure, while not all aspects of our change, the information we have, some of it's not locked down. I think there is obviously sufficient certainty of at least pieces and parts of it mm-hmm. To be able to move forward. We have heard from parents, and I think everybody in this room agrees that starting your educational process off on a good footing is critical. And so we've always, I think, had in mind trying to do the best that we could possibly do,
mm-hmm.
and I think this takes us in that direction. So,
And I would just also comment that I think, the reality of just like your hiring processes now and how you always try and stay neutral has allowed us to have a nice cash balance to support us. The reality is we are deficit spending now, so our expenditures are greater than our revenue. And so, again, you know, using that long-term planning model, we do need to save where we can. I feel like this is kind of a nice compromise, having this information, knowing it's not guaranteed, but knowing that with the additional resignations out there and continuing to, you know, to follow the hiring freeze for the higher grades, that's gonna be able to keep us on a good track in the future and kind of be prepared for fiscal stability, financial stability as much as possible. So
I think it's clear that the public knows that we still have an actualized savings.
Yes, yes.
Right. What we were looking
right.
to work towards.
Right.
And we have new information.
Yes.
That says it's in our financial best interest to mm-hmm. keep all day, every day kindergarten.
Right.
And we already know that all day, every day kindergarten is the best model for our students.
Right.
And with our original contingency plan, that was to have a hiring freeze,
mm-hmm.
but that we understood
right.
that could impact programming. And so I think we're making this decision, or we
mm-hmm.
may make it based off of the new information, the new stimulation
right.
from the House budget, and that we know we have the actualized savings.
Right. Okay. Any other comments? Okay, roll call.
Mr. Keck?
Yes.
Mr. Smith?
Yes.
Mr. Ferguson?
Yes.
Ms. Savage?
Yes.
Ms. Devine?
Yes. Motion carries. And now finally, I would accept a motion to approve the amended contingency plan.
So moved.
Right. Second.
Motion by Mr. Ferguson, second by Mr. Keck. Any comments? Roll call, please.
Mr. Ferguson?
Yes.
Mr. Keck?
Yes.
Ms. Savage?
Yes.
Mr. Smith?
Yes.
Ms. Devine?
Yes. Motion carried. I know we spent all this time talking about that. Is there anything else that anyone wants to discuss, any post-levy discussions right now? I guess the one thing I was thinking, I know our levy chairs are here tonight, and that we have been hearing from a variety of people. I know we're going to continue to listen to them. We want to hear suggestions. And I think there may be some plans to offer some larger settings where people can come in and really make sure that they have accurate information and understand the complexities of school finance and know what some of our limitations are, and just really try and work together to come up with a plan that our community will feel comfortable supporting.
Will we have a work session or just a meeting specifically for what are the next steps with asking for new revenue? I know we have heard from the community that income tax is a possible ask for
right.
us to take action on to support.
Right.
I know there was advisory committees, mm-hmm. but maybe as a board, should we look at some of our options in a work session?
Yeah. Yep.
Kind of ask to be on the same page when do we have to make a decision for our levy ask? What's right. our deadline?
It's going to be
July 29th.
Okay.
Right. So sometime over the next two and a half months.
The hope would be in an earlier conversation to potentially bring some groups together, mm-hmm. Focus group kind of setting, mm-hmm. to ask some really pointed questions, mm-hmm. To get feedback on, perception of the vote,
mm-hmm.
why your vote went the way it did,
mm-hmm.
those kind of things, maybe
mm-hmm.
a potential survey.
Mm-hmm.
So there are some things in the works as we speak.
Yeah, but yes, we're definitely going to need to meet,
in
a separate meeting to really, and I think once we, we're not going to know about state funding until the end of June, but even before that, I know like in our May regular meeting, I'm sure Todd's going to have a couple different scenarios to share with us, and so maybe after that, maybe after a few focus groups, then we can sit down and try and hash some things out and throw around different ideas.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, sound good?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I would also say that members of the board have already started to work to address issues and concerns that
yes.
have been raised during the campaign.
Yes.
To try to gather new information or to try to end up with a changed situation.
Yes.
For the future.
Right. And we'll be discussing
and
later
hopefully
tonight.
Hopefully those efforts will be successful.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Good with this topic. I think we do have, I think I'd like to switch around the order and go ahead and do our grievance hearing next. And then we'll end up with our economic development incentive. You okay with that?
Mm-hmm. I think we have people here specifically to hear the
the economic development.
Too.
Oh, okay. Okay.
No.
Well.
I'm fine staying course with the agenda.
Yeah. Okay. Mm-hmm. All right. Then we'll move on. Can we just take a brief recess? I'm just going to.
I can let Sean know.
Okay.
He said just come.
Okay, yeah.
To get him,
they want to
let him know.
Yeah, like if they need
that
to go get dinner or something,
Dinner.
Right, because I know that thing came straight from work. Okay, so we'll move on to our discussion of economic development incentive policy and TIF conversation, actually. So a couple of different things here. So, once Diane comes back, I know she has shared some timeline information with all of us on negotiations that have been ongoing over the past year.
Mm-hmm.
So Okay. So Diane, would you like to start out this conversation by kind of going over the timeline and just some of the facts about what we have been doing as a board under with I guess how what you've been doing on behalf of the board over the past year or more.
So you're going to get a folder that has copies of everything I'm going to talk about, and they're referenced on the timeline that I provided for you, so you're not going to be able to dig into them all tonight for sure, but I'll give you a high-level overview. So certainly there's been a lot of conversation about relationship with the city and residential TIFs and abatements.
You want to come to that one?
They can. And so I thought it was important to really give a timeline to the board of some different activities that were taking place. As you know, I've communicated with you throughout the process, but to kind of put them on record and then have discussion on those. So honestly, if we go all the way back to April of 2022, there was a meeting where Terry, Emery, Brad, the finance director for the city, Eric, Todd, and I got together to discuss an incentive package, and actually the Kroger site was a part of that conversation. In that conversation, it became obvious to Todd and I that there was a lack of understanding about school finance and the nuances included with how our budget works from the state. Todd did follow up with an email to city council explaining how school finance works and trying to create some context. And then there was a follow-up city meeting where they quoted Todd's email and gave lots of inaccurate data to kind of paint a negative light on the district and some of the things that were being said. And I would say that has really been the cornerstone moving forward. So I already see a little typo that should say residential tips,
residential.
Yeah. But in April of that month, all of you made a statement about residential TIFs. That's included in your packet. I'm sure you remember approving that. Mm-hmm. But in essence, that the district did not support residential TIFs, but we were interested in working together moving forward. In May and June, there were several more projects that surfaced over the time where we were characterized as negative and anti-growth. Then there was a meeting scheduled for August 30th. In prep for that meeting, I met with Eric and Terry to really discuss what the outcomes should be for that August 30th meeting in order to be proactive, if you will, and that the idea is that we would go in with positive intentions and start to work together. August 30th, that meeting was not as productive as I would. It wasn't productive at all, actually. It turned out to be a lot of finger pointing and frustration, and actually the meeting was kind of wrapped up with a suggestion that our legal teams would work together because we were unable to really get anything accomplished. In a follow-up conversation from Mr. Emery, I was told that the school district should have come with what they wanted to the meeting, which was not the framework for that meeting. The meeting was kind of a first step collaborative effort. Mm-hmm. Then we received from Eric kind of what the tax incentives were in the area and why we needed tax incentives to be competitive to other communities. Then we continued to have conversations about a big expansion on the east side of town. Then Terry and Eric and I got together again and talked about some potential changes actually to paper with the EDIP, and those copies are in your packet. We submitted a proposal. They countered that on October 30th of last year. Then it's really been kind of a back and forth, which you will see all the documents in your packet. As you know, Eric came and talked to the board. The documents are included in that he sent through email that really shows in detail our current EDIP, what if we went to the state minimums, you know, what if we were to receive pilot payments, and really played all those out. And since he sent those to me by email, they're included in your packet tonight as well. And you can definitely see that when you turn to the state minimums, it does create a substantially different financial picture for the school districts in those scenarios when you are not included in the EDIP. So we received a counter and then also submitted back on November 28th, kind of a rebuttal. We had some follow-up at the end of December, and that's really when the conversation emerged. I brought forward to Mr. Emery at that time and asked, you know, are you currently making your bond debt payment on the TIFs? The TIFs are not part of the EDIP. So the conversation prior to that was mainly about the EDIP. So when I talked about the TIF, he said, well, yeah, we're making our bond debt payment. And I said, well, would there be consideration then moving forward if we pass a new levy that the school district could actualize all that money? Because people don't approve a new money ask thinking that the city is going to get the money. They expect the school district to get the money. And he said, well, interesting idea. I'm not sure. I think we could do that, but let's keep the conversation going. So conversation continued to emerge. We continued to get things in writing. In the end of January, I received an email from Eric and said, you know, I think we're pretty close. What if we bring your legal in and bring us all together? So on February 14th, we all met. And we had basically, we had a conceptually agreed upon agreement. The only thing that was kind of out in the, to be decided yet, is the agreement did say all TIFs. And Brad was not sure that he could make the same commitment on commercial TIFs as residential. He said there was no, in his mind, doing the numbers on the residential side, he did not have any hesitations about giving the district increased revenue if we were successful on the ask. He was concerned about commercial. So he was going to go back and do figuring based on that. The other thing that was kind of out still is they wanted, back on the EDIP side, that they wanted CRA areas and blighted areas, and we requested a map for those, and we did not have that at that time. So then we received the blighted areas on the 15th. We left the 14th that Gary, our attorney, legal, would go ahead and come through with the agreement and send that to the legal team for the city and their consultant, Andy Bassard.
Can I quickly interject just to point out that that a part of this conversation was creating a deadline.
Yes,
yeah.
Thank you.
Okay, yeah.
So on the 14th, at that meeting, we reached agreement, and the idea was to have something final from both sides done by March 6th so that it would have time to be read by City Council prior to the levy and approved. So that would give enough chances for City Council to approve something prior to the levy. Let's see. So our attorney did that, tried to reach out to their legal team for several weeks with no response. Then on March 20th, I sent back to them a document that was acceptable from both the entities that they asked them to reach out to. On April 5th, I met with Terry, Emery, and Eric Phillips again, and I was given an alternate document with modifications. And I was told that the city was giving up too much in the deal that they had agreed to on February 14th. And specifically, one of those items was that the school district was to talk positively about growth moving forward, that was something they wanted included in the agreement. And that agreement is in here as well. Let's see, so we met again on the 13th at our COG meeting. Let me go back. So Terry called me after a city council meeting on the 11th and said there were a lot of concerns over the TIF proposal, and that moving forward, it was the expectation of city council for the school district to be better partners in order to consider an agreement like this. When I asked for clarification on what that would be, it would be basically not questioning projects that came forward. On the 13th, I met with Terry and Eric, and I told them that at this point, it obviously was not going to occur by the time, you know, the election would take place. So I no longer wanted to talk about the EDIP. If they wanted to talk about the TIF arrangement, I would make myself available. On April 27th, I met with Terry and Tim Aslanier and discussed the challenges that were taking place. And at that time, I talked about, again, that certainly we did sign off on the TIF agreement. We're not ignoring the fact that the school district partnered with the city to do that in 2004. We accept that. At that time, in 2004, it would appear to me that the city was in need of help, that they had received a citation, they needed a partner, they needed help financing, and the way I perceive it and understand, the school district came through and reached an agreement with them. Our financial situation was different at that time. Our community was different at that time. And I have said more than once to Terry and again to Tim that, you know, now it appears to me that the tables are turned a little bit and the school district would benefit from assistance and a partnership. And this would be one way that actually didn't cost them anything, that there was a net gain taking place by the benefit of the 8.4 millage levy if it were to pass. And that I was just thinking that, you know, we were the ones in need now, that the city would be willing to come through. At that time, I was encouraged to think about, if the city did that, what was I willing to give the city? For example, maybe our percentage would go up for what we pay for SROs, which is counterproductive to our operating fund. It's counterproductive to what we were trying to achieve. So I was told to put together our amended language, or what we thought that agreement could look like. I sent that to Terry on May 7th. I believe I forwarded that to all of you as well. I did receive, which is not on this timeline, an email yesterday and from Eric trying to, who would like to get back together and talk about the EDIP. And I was told that Terry and J.R. Roush will be representing the city on that conversation. So I would need a board member to attend those meetings with me. I forwarded the dates to Sue last evening. So to date, that's kind of where we stand. I guess I would ask if you have any questions about the timeline. Certainly there has been a substantial amount of planning and effort that has gone into this document or to this process. It is disappointing that there's mm-hmm. not a resolution when there was an overall consensus. Mm-hmm. Obviously still had to be approved through council, but all the parties at the table had consensus. Todd was there as well.
And I don't know if I heard this, but I think if it was said, it's worth reiterating. I mean, the point was made back in, I think, March, is that, you know, we were hearing from the community people saying we're going to vote no for this levy because we don't want to vote for a levy that's not going to benefit the schools. The majority of that money is going to go to the city, so we're going to vote no. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, that was the gist of the negotiations is we want the community to be able to vote for a levy that's going to support the school. We want to be able to tell these people who are telling us they're going to vote no, well, you know, here, we've adjusted this, and, you know, now you can, at least that wouldn't be a reason to vote no. And mm-hmm. that was, I think, understood by all parties.
Yeah. And actually, when we did share some of that information with Terry and Eric, the response was, do those people understand they wouldn't even have a place to live if it wasn't for the TIF? I mean, I can't predict...
Right.
The future. Right. Yeah. So they were frustrated because they felt like we didn't fully explain the TIF. Mm-hmm. We believe we did. They also wanted us to put a dollar amount. We have said the whole time that we get 34% of right. what we would actually get. That's been a static comment. They right. would like us to quantify that number. Mm-hmm. That number is...
I can quantify the numbers. So just last year, on the residential side, we received close to $2 million, which means we lost $3.85 million in just a year.
Yep. And what was our deficit this year?
Right, exactly. So, I mean, it's as far as getting numbers, because I've been getting questions from people.
Right.
You know, well, what's the total number we've lost, that kind
right.
of thing. There's a lot of different ways to look at it. Mm-hmm. I can go back to 2016 without digging through mm-hmm. old files of paper documents. So that's where,
right.
you know, so going back to 2016, if you look at total TIFs, we've lost $27 million. Mm-hmm. You can break that out between commercial and residential. With commercial, it's about $8.2 million. With residential, it's over $19 million. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, if you look at it from that $19 million standpoint, where the $3.85 million in 1 year standpoint, it's easy to say we wouldn't be on the ballot in May or November, for that matter, if these residential TIFs didn't exist. And, I mean, I think another way to look at it, I mean, because the city's said multiple times, if it weren't for these residential TIFs, mm-hmm. these people wouldn't live here. You know, mm-hmm. there wouldn't be homes in Mill Valley or whatever. I don't know whether that's true or not. Mm-hmm. But in essence, because, you know, the school at that time agreed, you know, to do those residential TIFs so that the city could build the water treatment plant, mm-hmm. you know, we turned around and then had to pass a bond issue to build, you know, Northwood, to build Mill Valley.
Right.
So, you know, not only did we help them with, you know, the funding of the water treatment plant, we turned around and had to raise additional money to build buildings because they used that residential TIF as a driver for growth.
Right. And I mean, one thing, I'm a little tired, not a little, I'm really tired of, like this, looking back and blaming different people or, you know, saying, oh, well, they approved it and we were great partners in and stuff. The reality is things were totally different back then. And right now, it's our opportunity to look into the future, to be forward-thinking, and look at things logically. And, you know, the reality is when those were approved, it brought in a certain amount of money. And over time, since 2005, there was one new, or only new money levy that passed in 2008. So for the past 15 years, there have been additional revenues going into that TIF fund from them, and then even just property valuation increases, you know, and So I guess when I think about this levy that was on recently, and the idea that we're, you know, being greedy by asking for this money or something, I'm just floored by that. I mean, it's like, come on, it had nothing to do with the original agreement, and because and you know, maybe it was wonderful. Maybe Marysville would have died without that. I don't know. Nobody knows. But we have a vibrant community now, and we've had some great partnerships. We've done some great things together with the city, and I hope, wholeheartedly hope, that we'll continue to do great things together. But we've got to be, you know, both sides have to come to the table in good faith. And I felt like as a board, we were updated regularly on what was going on with the negotiations, and, you know, kind of felt that sense of hope, hey, we're making some progress here. And then at the last minute, felt like the rug got pulled out from under us. And, you know, I'm tired of the finger pointing. I'm tired of comments about, we're not doing a good job managing our money. We don't have a good comprehensive plan, things like that. I mean, that does nothing for our community. And so I just encourage everybody to stay focused on what our challenges are out there and listen to each other. And, I mean, truly listen to each other. Everybody has challenges with growth. And we'd have challenges if we didn't have the growth. Let's, you know, growth can be good, but you have to work together.
So we have two things moving. We have the UDIP and we have the residential TIF.
Yes.
What is the city's, when it comes to residential TIFs, there's been new levies since the original agreement. What?
Just one.
One
operating levy.
No,
only one.
I'm at large in the community, I can assume that when you sign a 30-year TIF,
right,
that during that lifetime there's new levies,
yes,
which increases revenue.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. What is the city's position? What do they do with that increased revenue? Have they responded, or they pretty much said, we've met our obligations that we've signed to, and they give you an assurance that this is feasible, correct?
Yes. We were told that the revenue that they're currently collecting is paying the debt obligation annually.
Okay.
So any additional revenue wouldn't be needed to pay their debt.
So
that was important to me. I wasn't looking for them not to pay their debt.
So that, I'm sorry, that was already defined.
Yes.
Because it seems like this week that narrative has started to change. We had a meeting two weeks ago, saying that they are exploring options, what to do with the increased revenue if a levy passes. Could
right.
they, you know, do other projects or give a rebate or something? Now, last week or this week, Monday, they're saying, we don't know if we can do this because we have to check with our
legal
for making sure we don't violate any debt obligations. But
right.
that conversation was had months ago, and that insurance was given months ago, correct?
Correct.
So we're not out here looking crazy saying this was the deal. There was a conversation. They've already done that due diligence.
Yeah, and I circled back on that very same point with Terry in the last meeting,
and
he acknowledged that we did have agreement, but he's always said it had to get city council approval, which is why we were looking for a March completion to have the time to have that happen.
Right.
Now, with the EDIP, I'm sorry.
No, go ahead.
With the EDIP, what are our asks? What are we trying to improve? Because those are two different things. We have President TIF, and I'll switch to the EDIP. What are we trying to improve to make it better for the schools and our community?
Well, it's important to keep in mind the original negotiation was kind of a combination of the EDIP and those residential TIFs together. So that kind of drove a certain conversation, that drove a certain proposal that, you know, might not look quite the same if you take those two things apart. But in general, you know, I think the largest thing that we've talked about that's a negative to the school with the EDIP is the loss of income tax sharing as part of the EDIP as compared to what's required in state law. So if you take an agreement that would be approved, a tax incentive agreement that would be approved through the EDIP compared to something that would be approved based on state law, the school is always going to lose revenues compared to what's in state law.
When in the EDIP?
Yes, if we follow the current EDIP.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and in essence, what the EDIP does is let's say, for instance, there's a commercial tax incentive when that commercial entity comes in, that generates some new real estate tax revenues for the school. But then also per state law, there's a little bit of an income tax sharing, because in essence, why that is, when there's an incentive or an abatement, the school is the loser. Okay, because we're the ones that are getting the most of the tax revenue, the real estate tax revenues. So when you're giving a company an abatement on those real estate tax revenues, it's money that's coming from the school. So the school is always the biggest loser in that part of things. On the other side, when that new company comes in, there's a big influx of new employees, new wages, which means an increase in income tax, which means the city is kind of the winner when it comes to that income tax side. That's why with state law, there's an income tax sharing component, which means that, the school's losing out here on the revenue, on the real estate tax revenue side, you're going to have to share some of that income tax with the school. Okay, so that's how that happens. What the EDIP does is it basically penalizes the school district for the real estate tax revenues that we are receiving, and that reduces the income tax sharing that we would receive. So in essence, that's why the city wants to keep the EDIP, is because it saves them from sharing as much of that income tax revenues, and that's the main reason the school is not in favor of the EDIP, is because we're not receiving as much, and we're giving up more than we have to.
So if we agree tonight to get out of the EDIP, it takes a whole year to get out, mm-hmm. and so their request for more negotiations just pushes that further down the road, and if we vote tonight to get out of the EDIP, we can always mm-hmm. Negotiate a new EDIP down the road. It doesn't mm-hmm. they got a whole year of basically selling city projects with our money the way things are right now, and so I don't know why we keep listening to them and pushing that further out, other than it helps their position mm-hmm. tremendously.
So even under the EDIP, there are still things that require board approval, correct?
Correct. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So there still are, depending mm-hmm. on the size, the percentage, and the length of time, still mm-hmm. things still would come to the board for approval mm-hmm. in that year time frame. Mm-hmm.
So most of the requests that I've seen are 75%, 10-year, mm-hmm. mm-hmm. and those don't require board approval.
Correct. And that won't change. I mean, that's one of the reasons, any city is going to use those sometimes, mm-hmm. is because then you don't have to, get approval of the board. It's just, you can just hand them out as easily as you want.
I would also say one of the things we have urged over time mm-hmm. is go ahead and offer incentives, mm-hmm. but don't make them non-school incentives. Other communities do this. Mm-hmm. Dublin, for mm-hmm. example. Do whatever you need to do to entice a company to come, but keep the school district whole. Has really been the avenue that ultimately we'd like to see.
Mm-hmm. Even though they don't have to do that, that's what we would encourage them to do, obviously.
Well, right. Correct. When statements are made that you have to get incentives to have development, mm-hmm. You look at a Dublin and you certainly say, they're offering incentives, but their schools are held whole. Mm-hmm. And so mm-hmm. why can't we do that?
Mm-hmm. There's just a lot of different options. There's, the EDIP creates here's a cookie cutter. We have to do this. Well, at the same time, you can steal the school's real estate tax revenues to incentivize a business. But on the flip side, you could take the increase in income taxes that the city is getting, and they could use those monies to do it the same way. Mm-hmm. So it doesn't mm-hmm. have to be, let's always take from the school.
Mm-hmm. I have two questions. One, how would the relationship change when a company comes into town and they want to have an incentive? Without EDIP, how would that relationship change with the company and you?
I think we would see a big benefit there, because then, right now we're relying on the city to be
negotiating in the best interest of the school, which I wouldn't say we've seen has been the case, especially like with the Pioneer Project most recently. So without that EDIP in place, I think there's a more likelihood that the school would be involved. We would maybe mm-hmm. have a seat at the table, have a little more of a voice when it comes to those negotiations.
Mm-hmm. And the only thing I would add is we requested that. So when you look through the evolution of the versions, we asked to have a seat at the table. They were told they didn't want us there.
Do you feel that, and maybe you've already answered this question, but do you feel like the EDIP and the process that's in place is negotiating in the best interest of the community as a whole or the best interest of the city? Meaning, do you think there's negotiating and selling the quality of our schools, the families, the people who live and work here, or do you think it's just the cookie-cutter approach, as you said?
I mean, just my opinion, it's not helping the school. I mean, when you're doing something that is less advantageous to the school than what it should be, and being less advantageous, it's more advantageous to the city because you're where's that income tax going, that income tax sharing? So, I mean, it's just clear that it's not favoring the school.
The only caveat I would add to that is they do like to highlight the school. So a couple really mm-hmm. big groups that have shown interest, and we haven't landed those projects, they typically are doing tours of early college and trying to look at what we're doing with workforce and have me meet with them in that capacity, but not to negotiate anything like that.
But it's best if either of you are at the table to negotiate on the behalf of the school because you represent the school's interest. And
correct.
And right now the current system is not doing that.
Yeah, I think it feels like things are being done to you, right?
Okay.
And so having a voice is always important, right? It's empowering. It makes you feel a part of a team. And that piece is not existent.
And I would point out that our attorney that deals with this issue for us, you know, works with dozens and dozens mm-hmm. of schools throughout Ohio. And, he says that, you know, we're one of a very few number of districts that has an EDIP. And he says that the schools that he works with that doesn't have an EDIP, things run smoothly. You know, they have a seat at the table, they negotiate with the companies, and, mm-hmm. and it comes to a expedient and, you know, mutually beneficial result.
Mm-hmm. So just a couple points. The original EDIP was signed in 2004, correct?
Six, I think. 2006.
2006. Mm-hmm. Okay, that's a long way away from
now.
Right. Okay, and the situation with the city as far as what was going on with the water and sewer system, okay, that was a long time ago, and we're still seeing benefits from that, and maybe that was a good agreement at that point. Mm-hmm. But things have evolved drastically since 2006, and we've been trying to negotiate for almost a year, okay? So I think we need to consider doing what's best for our school district.
Mm-hmm. I'm really disappointed. Economic development and I don't know whether the city was involved or not, but there was a presentation that Sue and I attended probably 2 years ago, and a gentleman from Texas was flown in to make a presentation, another gentleman mm-hmm. from someplace else, I think mm-hmm. maybe California came in. Mm-hmm. And they went through how government entities need to work together, and they talked about all the different pieces of a community, the housing, the education, jobs, transportation, and so forth, parks and recreation, just all the different pieces that needed to go. And the emphasis, the point that they shared with us was that every single aspect has to benefit, that it can't be just, you know, the city benefiting or the school districts benefiting or whatever. Everybody has to benefit. And they said that to arrive at that and to be able to negotiate effectively, you have to have a common goal. And the common goal, from my perspective, is to make Marysville a great community, mean, it's a wonderful place to live. It's great in many aspects today, but to work to maintain it and even make it better. And so when we are in negotiations, and one of the points that the city wants us to sign off on is that we won't criticize any development, that we'll be very positive. We'll make all positive statements about any development that comes along, and we won't offer any criticism. You know, to me, you know, how do you have a discussion if you can't talk about some of the troubling points on both sides? You've got to be able to do that. When a business comes, I would hope that new businesses that want to locate in Marysville want to be invested in our community. And being invested in our community could mean that they go beyond bare minimums to support the school system, to agree to additional payments or some sort of changes in compensation that might not result in the maximum savings, the maximum tax benefits or income benefits to them in the long run. I had written down a question, and you answered it before I ever got to ask it, and that was, if there were no residential TIFs, would we have needed a tax issue? And so when you look at the EDIP, which does not provide the benefits that just state law would provide our school district, and when you look at the tax incentives and everything that I've seen says that the city wants to retain residential TIFs as an option, you know, that becomes, for me, a huge disappointment, because it's hard to see a partnership unless you're seeing the same goals. Mm-hmm. And it seems like that the vision that we have of working toward a broader, better community and doing our part within the educational piece of our community may not be shared with some of the other boards and committees in our community. And that, I think, is disappointing.
And I would also point out in that meeting that the presenters commented about, if you do happen to have an agreement, that it's something that needs to be reviewed every 3 to 5 years. Mm-hmm. And so we're well past that time frame.
Mm-hmm. When was the last time the EDIP was amended?
2016?
Yes.
Yeah. So what, 7 years ago now. I do happen to have a resolution here, so any other
comments? I just wanted to clarify one question that came up in the council meeting. I think a statement was made that about 10 years ago they were not making their bond debt. And there was a comment about lack of planning from the school district's perspective. Have we ever not made our bond debt?
No, we've always.
Okay.
I was thinking about that, too, because not only have we not been in trouble with any bond holdings, since I've been on the board, we've refinanced multiple times, and I should have asked you how much money we have saved our taxpayers, because we've reduced our bond millage.
It's in the millions.
Millions of dollars from just, you know, being alert and being ready to act when interest rates change and when it's beneficial for our taxpayers. So kudos to you. Any other comments? In that case, I do have a resolution. It's not on our agenda here, but I have a resolution that I can read to withdraw from the Economic Development Incentive Policy of Union County, Ohio. I would accept a motion to approve this resolution.
So moved.
Motion by Mr. Keck.
Second.
Second by Mr. Smith. So I will read it since it's not on there. Whereas the Board of Education of the Marysville Exempted Village School District is a party to an economic development incentive policy that was approved by various local government entities, including the board, in June 2006. And whereas Section 6M of the EDIP permits a party to withdraw from the EDIP agreement by notifying the Union County Community Improvement Corporation 1 year in advance of it withdrawing from the EDIP agreement, and whereas the board has been attempting to renegotiate the terms of the EDIP with CIC, Union County, and the City of Marysville for many months to help eliminate and or offset financial harms, and whereas the board wishes to withdraw from the EDIP agreement because it is not in the best financial interest of the school district to remain a part of the EDIP agreement, whereas the board is willing to enter into a revised EDIP agreement that is more beneficial to the school district, provided that such a revised EDIP agreement is negotiated on or before the effective date of the board's withdrawal from the EDIP agreement, now therefore be it resolved by the Board of Education of the Marysville Exempted Village School District that the board hereby approves its approval from the EDIP agreement and hereby directs the superintendent or treasurer to provide written notice of the same to the CIC pursuant to Section 6M of the EDIP agreement, along with a copy of this resolution. Section 2, the CIC is hereby advised that the board will consider a revised EDIP agreement that is more beneficial to the school district, provided that such a revised EDIP agreement is negotiated on or before the effective date of the board's withdrawal from the EDIP agreement. In Section 3, it is found and determined that all formal actions of this board concerning or related to the adoption of this resolution were adopted in an open meeting of this board, and all deliberations of this board and any of its committees, if any, that resulted in such formal actions were adopted in meetings open to the public in compliance with all applicable legal requirements of the Ohio Revised Code. Any comments or questions?
I'll do a comment.
Sure.
You know, today we're going to have to vote on this resolution, and I will be supporting this, not because I'm against all incentives. I think there are times, and I know maybe some of you disagree with me, but there are times where you have to incentivize the big shark, the game changer of economic development. However, when incentives are offered, if someone asks for one, and there is no strategy, it's not fulfilling a certain part of what we're lacking in economic development, and if the school district does not have a seat at the table, and if the school district does not feel as if their needs are being met, they're being represented, and there's no serious intention of negotiating. And when I say serious, I mean there is no way I can agree to speaking or binding the voice of a future board member, right, binding the voice of a future district. You know, we are all here in temporary seats. I cannot bind someone else's voice and say you must be proactive, and it's not enforceable. Therefore, it indicates, and also the second thing, this is the residential CIF. You know, there was a deadline, agreed deadline. Council was not even was aware of that until way after that agreed deadline. This resolution gives a year notice. So, you know, next year, May 10th, 2024, we will be officially out unless all parties agree to a better version of the EDIP. This does not signal that we don't want economic development. It does not signal that we are not supportive of growth or anything. It signals that we are serious about negotiating. Right. And now we are going to start the clock on when negotiations should end by. And that's why I'll be supporting this, because we have to come to a better solution. And we have to be serious and professionals in how we navigate through the next couple months to make sure that the schools... I can't ask someone to raise their taxes and then say we should give away taxes to others. I can't do that. And that's why we support it. Thank you.
Yeah, I would second everything that Jermaine said. And I think also it's important to recognize that if your overarching goal is to create a greater community, that growth is critical. If a community isn't growing, then it's not going to have the vibrancy, it's not going to have the attractiveness, it's not going to have the energy that brings people together. And so our school district, I think, you know, is very much in favor of growth, but as that occurs, like everything, it needs to be managed. And it needs to be managed so that all parties, all aspects of our community life benefit. And we've got great people in this community. We've got great leadership in this community, and there's absolutely no reason why we can't put together a plan to make sure that as new homes, as new businesses and so forth come in, that everybody benefits.
Mm-hmm. I guess I would add to that and hope that the city, and I don't know, isn't dangling this carrot out here to get any future development by saying, well, here, come in here, here's X number of school dollars that we can give to you if you come and locate here. And I feel like that is something that is happening currently. And by getting out of the EDIP, that will stop that to some degree.
Right. We still have state legislation, right?
State legislation that could allow that. But
right, right.
You know, you can't say on one hand we have great schools and then on the other hand give away their money and expect that to continue to happen. So,
right. And it, well, okay. I mean, I guess just kind of that reiteration again of just the importance of really, like, let's throw out, forget about any personality issues. Let's stay focused on what the big goals are for our community. City and schools, because our community members deserve that, and they're expecting us to be professional and to, you know, really be willing to come together and have serious, respectful conversations, and let's move forward for the good of everybody.
Mm-hmm. So. Just a question.
Sure.
I know that there's going to be a negotiating team or the willingness to negotiate. Council will have a representative. Will we?
Yes.
Elect your representative, will that be? Yeah. Who will that be?
We have not decided that yet.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I just sent that to Sue last night.
Thank you.
Yep. So we'll figure that out.
Okay.
Okay. I guess we need a roll call.
Mr. Keck?
Yes.
Mr. Smith?
Yes.
Mr. Ferguson?
Yes.
Ms. Savage?
Yes.
Ms. Devine?
Yes. Motion carries. We are now ready to move on to our final agenda item. So maybe we need to take a little recess here. Let's take a 5-minute recess. This is still on. Chad.
That can be your comment in the
newspaper. Hey, I'm the tape recorder. I'm keeping it on because I never know how to stop and start it, okay?
Sorry.
No.
It's federal and state that roll.
Yeah.
Usually not the 11
ones. Because I don't want it, when I turn it off, I've never figured out how to turn it back on without it starting.
I don't know something you said.
I guess I'll need a laptop.
Okay,
we'll go here.
Some things around.
And balance the budget now tonight.
Oh, nice.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
You are a genius. And then,
right here, so.
Okay, you're going to go for half a board training.
Board training.
Well, yeah, for the what conference were we just at? I had to skip a half a day.
Well, we pay. You don't. I don't think.
You pay the money.
Tape recorders on. So, tape recorders on. Okay. Tape recorders on here. So, I don't know if you can edit or not. When I turn it off, it's hard for me to turn it back on. So it's on right now. So okay. So we're gonna. Everybody ready to get started here?
You want them to set up the table or? I think so. Right. They should sit here.
Well, I'm just going to have them sit there right now
because
we're going to, so we'll get started in this. So right now we are still in open meeting. On tonight's agenda, we have a step four grievance submitted by Mr. Dan Oxley. Mr. Oxley and his representative, Mr. Dahl, are present. I'm going to begin the hearing by reading the grievance statement and requested remedy. Also want to note that the step three grievance was not timely and was denied, and the procedure for notification was not followed through the step four grievance. It should have been sent to the board's treasurer with a copy sent to the superintendent. But here is the grievance statement and requested remedy. And I received this on April 25th. The statement of grievance: the board violated Article 16 and any and all other articles that may apply by suspending Dan Oxley for 5 days and removing his ability to continue as an OBI. The additional pay incentive offered an OBI for the district as part of discipline process without previous progressive discipline and without just cause. The remedy requested is to reinstate Dan Oxley as an OBI with the additional pay Article 20H1, remove the discipline from Mr. Oxley's personal file, and to be made whole, including but not limited to lost wages and benefits. Having read that, I will now accept a motion to go into executive session for ORC 121.22 G number 1 to consider the discipline, compensation, or investigation of charges against a public employee.
So
motion by Ms. Savage.
Second.
Second by Mr. Keck. Roll call, please.
Ms. Savage?
Yes.
Mr. Keck?
Yes.
Mr. Ferguson?
Yes.
Mr. Smith?
Yes.